Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Kurdistan Connection with myself, Matt Broomfield. I'm very glad to say that today we're speaking with Samantha Teal from the Rojava Information Centre. This is the organisation that I worked with when I was in Rojava in north and east Syria some years ago, and I'm really glad that this information and news resource is still there, present on the ground, and they're still reporting directly on what's happening there and feeding information about that to the outside world. Today, we're of course going to be talking about the recent attacks that North and East Syria has suffered. The region has been under several forms of attack constantly since its foundation about 10 years ago. And this weekend saw a particularly deadly and particularly widespread range of aerial attacks targeting actually not only North and East Syria, but also other regions across the Middle East, including Iraq and the Yazidi homeland of Shengol or Sinjar. Today, we're going to be talking about what's happened in Rojava. What are these latest attacks? What's the impact? What is Turkey's tactics? And what is to be done about it? But first, yeah, I'd like to say hello to Samantha. Hi, Samantha. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And perhaps before we begin, you could just say in a couple of sentences, what is the Rojava Information Centre and what are you doing? What are you doing there?
The Rojava Information Centre is a volunteer-run media organisation working here in Rojava and northeast Syria more generally. We work to report what is happening on the ground all over northeast Syria and try to connect the wider world with what's happening here, because there is lack of clear information and reporting on the very important and significant events that have been occurring here since 2012. And the Rojava Information Centre was really set up to fill a gap that the international volunteers who had come here saw. And so that is how the Rojava Information Centre, or the RIC, began. And today we are still doing this work and are reporting from all across northeast Syria and connecting journalists from all over the world with what's happening here.
Absolutely. And thank you for speaking to our kind of international viewers across Europe and beyond today. Maybe we can begin with just an overview of kind of what happened this weekend. So obviously the region is often suffers aerial attacks. Sadly, what's kind of different about what's happened this weekend? Where was targeted? What happened?
Yeah, as you say, the region is constantly under aerial attack, but from the night of the 19th of November, so 3.5 days ago, until now, there's been a really intense aerial bombardment across northeast Syria, so all the way from Shehba in the west, all the way to Derek in the east, with both warplanes and drone strikes, as well as intermittent shelling in various villages close to the border with Turkey or close to the Turkish occupied areas. The intensity of this aerial bombardment is severe. The last time there was an attack such as this was back in February, when again we saw this string of aerial attacks all across Ness, northeast Syria, and some parts of northern Iraq too. Both times, Turkey, the Turkish Defense Ministry, gave the attack a name, a code name for this operation. That's how they presented it. And this time, there were a range of places hit. Firstly, there was several civilian spaces or targets that were hit, starting from Derek in the west, in the east.
Mm-hmm.
A power station in the village of Tekelbekel was hit. And today, myself and other members of the RIC went to Tekelbekel to talk to people who had witnessed this strike. And they told us that around midnight on the 19th into 1 a.m., they heard a loud explosion. And because this particular power station had also been targeted in Turkey's operation back in February, many of the people we spoke to said they assumed that the same place had been hit and they went there. They said that they assumed there would be people killed and injured and they wanted to help. And they said when they arrived that many people had come from all over the surrounding villages. And they said that there were, it was very dark, they couldn't see anything, but there was body parts everywhere and people who had been burnt from the explosion. As you can imagine, these were quite heavy or emotional conversations. The people said at around 3 a.m., warplanes conducted more strikes. And this time they said it was very chaotic because many people had congregated and there was warplanes circling the sky. And they said it was pitch black and they couldn't see anything. And people were trying to find their friends or their loved ones. And there was body parts around that the explosion had completely blown people beyond recognition. They really said it was horrific. And this targeting of the power station was not the only instance that essential infrastructure was targeted. I mean, near Zirgan, which is near the Turkish occupied area near the M4 International Road in northeast Syria, a grain silos was hit. And also in Kobani, near Kobani, on the outskirts, a medical building that had been used as a hospital during the peak of the coronavirus pandemic was also hit. In total, 11 civilians were killed in these strikes and 9 were injured. Also, a large number of Syrian Arab Army, the Damascus government's army, their military posts were targeted as well, and 15 Syrian Arab Army soldiers were killed. This is quite different from the attack in February, the last time a sort of large-scale string of aerial assaults like this was seen. Back in February, there wasn't so much targeting of the Syrian Arab Army, and this time, a number of the outposts were hit.
Mm-hmm. As you said, there's kind of a range of targets have been struck here, as kind of as I understand it, both military targets and civilian targets have been hit. First, actually, let's speak a bit more about what you saw in Tekelbekel and the people you spoke to. You said they suffered a strike back in February, they suffered the strike again, and then this repeat attack. You met these people, you spoke to the survivors. What's the impact of this method of warfare on local people?
I think all the people we spoke to were very clear in how they viewed the attacks, in who they viewed was responsible. They very clearly see Turkey as the aggressor, but they also were very angry at America, the guarantor power over part of the airspace in north and east Syria. They very much saw America as allowing Turkey to do this. And I think one of the impacts of these constant drone strikes is that the people are angry that America, who is supposedly the partner of the Syrian Democratic Forces, who is supposedly helping the Syrian Democratic Forces in their fight against ISIS. I think also in terms of, the impact on local people of these drone strikes is the situation of near constant threat in their daily life, the insecurity that these aerial attacks impose on civilian life. I mean, all the people who we spoke to also were naming their friends, their family as those who'd been killed and injured, people they knew, people they loved and cared for. And despite the fact that drone strikes are not a new thing in Ness, that they are almost semi-regular, when this round of bombing occurred, people were not unwilling or afraid of going to immediately help the injured and wounded, despite knowing that there is near constant threat of repeat attacks. And I mean, in this case, in the strike in Tekel Bekel near Derek, it was what we can call a double tap strike. The first strike occurred, time was given, and people congregated to help the injured and recover the bodies of the killed. And then it's unclear if there were three or four more strikes. Reports from the people who were there slightly differ. But yes, at around 3 a.m., so about 2 hours after the first strike, there were more strikes. And that was when most people were killed. Yes.
And so Turkey's claim with the kind of its use of drone warfare would be that this is a more surgical kind of warfare, that they're not launching a frontal assault, they're just hitting particular targets, and that therefore this is justified, as they would see it. What do you think Turkey's strategy is when it uses this campaign of drone strikes against the region? What's it trying to achieve?
In general, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the targeted drone strikes, this narrative is not unique to Turkey. Other governments, for example, the US, we can see using, in certain historical instances, use this narrative to sell their military campaign to the wider world, to make it acceptable, to make it seem clean, to make it seem, targeted and precise and surgical. And in this case, Turkey is employing this narrative to sell the strikes to the wider world, and specifically to US and Russia, who control the airspace in north and east Syria, therefore have to give the green light for any aerial attack. And so by using the narrative that drone strikes are precise and targeted, or that any strikes, that these strikes are precise and targeted, I suppose is how Turkey is trying to get around the fact that the US and Russia have, up until now, refused permission for a full ground invasion of north and east Syria, which Turkey announced plans for back in May. Therefore, it seems that the US and Russia have accepted that Turkey can conduct sort of limited aerial assaults that are still really damaging. I mean, if we look over the whole year, there have been 89 drone strikes, and that's not including these last 4 days, because as of yet, it's unclear which were drone strikes and which were strikes from warplanes. But if we consider, for example, the year of drone strikes, Turkey is selling this narrative that they're targeted precise strikes on military targets, but what we can see by looking at who has been killed is that it's a lot of civilians. 23 civilians have been killed this year and 61 have been injured. And I suppose if we evaluated Turkey's drone war or war of these targeted strikes this whole year, we can really see that figures are being targeted based on their perceived importance within democratic life here.
So maybe you could give some examples. So I think, yeah, kind of in this latest wave of strikes, there's perhaps, it's not so much the case that we're aware of particular people who have been targeted, but across the past year, there are particular individuals, both military and political, who have been targeted by Turkey. Maybe you could speak about some of those people.
Yeah. Frequent assassinations of, yeah, non-combatant figures. This is not a new method of warfare for Turkey, but in the last year it has been really intense. We've seen leaders within social organizations or prominent and respected figures within civilian communities, or even, political workers in North and East Syria being targeted. I suppose we can see this as a method Turkey is using to chip away at democracy here by targeting people who are really important within the flourishing democracy in North and East Syria, which is really a shining example for the whole region, maybe we could say, and removing also experienced and competent and respected leaders from communities in North and East Syria inevitably has a significant negative impact on civilian life.
In the sense you mean of kind of scaring people away from participating in politics in the region, but also in the sense of removing people who are trying to improve life for locals in various ways.
Yeah, I think for sure, when you see like you say, people who are trying to improve life for locals, whether that be in political, participating in a political party or in a institution of the autonomous administration, or whether in women's rights activism. I mean, these are all the kind of people that have been assassinated, we can say, in the last year. And those workers have also had to, I guess, take more intense security precautions due to this climate, due to the destabilization and insecurity that Turkey's imposing. And this limits their work as well. And like you say, for civilians, kind of overt participation in any sort of work that is in the autonomous administration here, or like I said before, yeah, the women's rights activists or the people who have leading a political party here, for example, overt participation in this is now seen as risky and discourages essential engagement that is at the core of any democracy.
And is this something you've noticed? Would you say there's like Turkey has succeeded in creating a climate of fear? Are people scared of or struggling to participate in civil and political life as a result of these attacks?
One notable thing is that when you talk to a lot of people, they would say they are not scared. Everyone, for example, I recently visited Dedek and talked to the people who are in this Tekel Bekel strike, and no one says they are scared. However, I suppose in terms of the work that can be done, if for people who want to get involved in political parties and women's rights activism in building democratic structures here. They must think carefully about their own safety while trying to carry out their work. And I mean, beyond this, Turkey hasn't shown restraint around where it's willing to strike. Let's say it has a target who is a someone who works in a political organization or yes, or within the autonomous administration. Populated civilian areas seem to be no barrier to Turkey's drones. It will strike, if it has a target, it will strike whenever. And so, we can definitely see it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as you said, people are kind of still willing to go out to put their lives on the line, but it shouldn't be that people are put in the situation. I just want to say, so we're coming now to the end of our discussion. I just wanted for our last question to take a little bit of a step back. So as you mentioned, and it's probably worth repeating for our viewers, there is kind of two zones of influence now in North and East Syria, with Russia to the west and America to the east, unusually. And they are seen as the guarantor powers. They control the airspace and they can decide or not whether Turkey can launch any kind of invasion. Is there like a realistic expectation that America or Russia will stop Turkey from launching these attacks? Or do you think this is the compromise they've reached and this is going to continue indefinitely?
It seems that this is the compromise they've reached. After many of the aerial assaults or drone strikes have been carried out, the US is quick to condemn the attack or pass condolences to the families of those killed, yet never mentions Turkey by name, never calls out Turkey for the attack, and is unwilling to take a clear stance against Turkey's attacks. Therefore, it's clear that, yes, America has given some, and Russia, given some sort of green light to allow this limited form of attacks that is not a ground invasion yet is somewhat pacifying Erdogan, who did not get the green light for the ground invasion that he announced his desire for in May. And given that the US and the SDF are supposedly partners in the anti-ISIS coalition, this is obviously a contradiction. I mean, the coalition and US's intelligence and logistical and military support for the SDF is very important for the SDF in its quest to remove ISIS from North and East Syria. Yet at the same time, the US is permitting Turkey to carry out these extrajudicial killings in airspace under US remit, or at least is taking no action to prevent them. I mean, a full-scale ground invasion would obviously force the US to respond in a meaningful way. And so Turkey is just able to weaken North and East Syria with minimal international security through these drone strikes. And the US is seemingly fine with that, and Russia too. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very subtle tactic. And I think that's an important point to emphasize as we close as well. We've been speaking today largely about the impact on civilians and on civil life, because even if these strikes were only to target the SDF, this is not a force which has been aggressive towards Turkey. This is a force which is allied with the West, and indeed nominally, as it were, allied with Turkey as part of the international coalition to defeat ISIS. Leaving aside the fact that these attacks, as you've explained, with reference to your trip today, that also affects civilians in many different ways as well. Thank you for your time today, Samantha, and for your work and your efforts there on ground in North East Syria. I'm sure our viewers appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Yeah, thank you for joining us. This has been the Kurdistan Connection with myself, Matt Broomfield, and we look forward to our viewers and guests joining us again for the next episode. Goodbye.